Still no announcement, waiting for the replay official Gene Semko and Michael Vander Velde, the referee. Kenny Dillingham, you see, very adamantly believes this game's over.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
As for what happened to Army at the hands of Notre Dame, we will not comment at this moment out of respect for our troops.
Russ Dellinger.
The great Dan Johnson, high school buddy of mine.
And SI's Pat Forning.
Ole Miss was literally dunked on.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we are learned men here. Our audience is full of scholars, people of education and knowledge. So let me read from one of America's great works of literature. Prose so perfect you might believe it had been written by Hemingway, Shakespeare. It's not American, but bear with me. When a real playoff plan is implemented, the implications for every game, from ACC to Big East to MAC to Mountain West, are far-reaching. This was written in 2010, by the way. So, RIP Big East. The chase for the at-large bids would create a national free-for-all. The interlocking fortunes would take what people currently see as the thrill of college football and amplify it times 10. Any given Saturday in November currently provides four or five games with national implication. Imagine dozens of games, the fortunes of every bubble team shifting by possession, a tapestry of drama. Scores would change, scenarios would evolve, fortunes rise and fall, all too fast for ESPN's Reese Davis to dream up enough subtle one-liners.
It's actually pretty good writing, although quoting yourself is a bit much.
Well, Jeff Passan probably wrote that part of Death to the BCS, not me. Okay. He is a much better writer, baseball expert for ESPN. 2010, Death to the BCS, this is what we wrote. Because the people that ran this sport said, you're going to kill the regular season, it's going to be terrible. Well, Saturday came, and the playoff is officially here. This is it. This is the day when all of that I just mentioned, the fortunes interlock, games you had no reason to watch became impossible to turn away, leagues you didn't know. You're looking up tiebreakers from leagues you don't care about. What have I told you, gentlemen? Alabama immolated its season, presumably, because really is anybody ever out of this zombie tournament? I don't know. By losing 24-3 to an Oklahoma team that, other than defeating the mighty Maine Black Bears, hadn't won since September. And their quarterback completed 9 passes for 68 yards. This prompted Oklahomans to storm the field early before the game was over. Then again, when it was, this may get them fined twice. By the SEC? I don't know. But it is kind of state tradition when the school name is Sooner and rushing into open land before allowed is celebrated.
There you go.
Alabama, 3 losses, most since 2010. 3 points, fewest since 2004. Give Kalen DeBoer this. Nice symmetry. Tough morning. What have I told you, Ole Miss? All they had to do was beat 2 teams with losing records to reach the playoffs. Arguably their greatest season since Archie Manning was around. I don't know, maybe longer. Only to get swamped at Florida, blow the whole thing, and see the Florida team take over their turnover basketball hoop that they had behind the bench. Slap a Gator logo on it and then do dunks.
Ole Miss was literally dunked on. Literally dunked on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Got to protect the basketball, the turnover basketball hoop. Mm-hmm. Try explaining this to a European. It was a basketball hoop. What if I told you Georgia sat back, beat UMass 59-21. But there was actually cause for concern because UMass rushed the ball for 226 yards in this game, which just a few weeks ago, they only managed 197 against Wagner. Regardless, Georgia won. And that's all that matters because the rest of the league threw up on itself. And Kirby Smart has got a spot in the SEC championship game, whether the coaches on the committee know ball or not.
Mm.
Meanwhile,
another game to show them, Dan. Another game to show them.
Another game to show them.
An extra game.
I don't think they want to show them that one. Meanwhile, Tennessee might have had the greatest day you can have.
Yeah.
They spent all week fretting about not being in the playoff ranking. They demolished UTEP and then sat back and watched Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Alabama, and Indiana lose. Vol fans were doing the Gator Chomp in Neyland Stadium to celebrate Florida beating Ole Miss, which I think was a sign of the apocalypse. And now, despite their best victory, Alabama not looking as good, they're going to be in this playoff. It was a great day for the Vols. See, let the cake bake.
Yeah. There you go.
Fretting is a kind word for what they were doing in the last week.
Well, they're good now. They're looking good. What if I told you there's a kid named Damon Greaves who's Australian? And his family traveled all the way to us from Australia to watch him punt for the Kansas Jayhawks on Saturday. Only he never punted. The Jayhawks completely wiped out Colorado.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Colorado didn't get a single stop, Dan. Not a single stop.
37-21. Really, Mom, I do this. Sure, Damon. Jayhawks are a Big 12 wrecking ball. Third consecutive victory over a ranked team despite still having a losing record. The Big 12 race now has a four-way tie in first, but eight teams could still make the championship game.
Baylor could still make the championship game, Dan. Baylor.
I think we fired their coach like 2 months ago.
Yeah. Crazy.
Arizona State certainly can make it. They beat BYU, but they too had two field stormings. So dramatic in Big 12. Got to do extra. Got to try a little harder. That was after a very unorthodox kill the clock strategy went completely awry.
Oof.
And nearly led to Kenny Dillingham assaulting the officials when they told him there was a second left.
Yeah.
Half of Maricopa County was on the field. It took. We'll go more on that later. I can tell you this, though. Farmageddon, the annual clash between Iowa State and Kansas State, now has national implications and not just for the tractor jokes. So, too, at least for ACC purposes, does a game next week in the Carrier Dome, where Syracuse and Miami will play and everyone should care. In the meantime, Scataburgers for all. Oregon State won the Pac-12 by defeating Washington State, moving to 1-0 on the conference. That was good. James Franklin. Yes, James Franklin made perhaps the most brilliant and gutsy call of the entire day by going for a fake punt in his own territory to get Penn State out of Minnesota with a one-point victory. But it don't matter how many. They won. That keeps them off of this list of misery, shame, and regret. Boise State played it pretty risky. Managed to beat Wyoming 17-13 after Ashton Gentry racked up his 2,000th yard of the season. It feels like 12,000 yards, but they escaped a Laradice, which would have been a crippling loss. They're likely getting a rematch with UNLV in the Mountain West Championship game. But the way they've been playing, Tulane and or Army out of the American is not completely dead. Go figure. For that fifth spot, fifth league champion. As for what happened to Army at the hands of Notre Dame, we will not comment at this moment out of respect for our troops. Thank you for your service. Not to be outdone, Lehigh fans. Lehigh, Pat.
Lehigh. Why are we talking about Lehigh?
Yeah, well, they had the 160th meeting with Lafayette. You're going to find out.
Oh, yeah.
160th meeting with Lafayette. They hadn't had a winning season since 2016. They beat Lafayette, and to celebrate, forget this small college stuff, they went big time. The students stormed the field and tore down one of the goalposts at Lehigh. You don't have like 30,000 dudes to do it.
Nor do you have $30,000 in the budget for a new goalpost.
No, those posts were probably planted 160 years ago. They then carried them from Goodman Stadium down to the Lehigh River in downtown Bethlehem and threw them off a bridge. Mm. Now, this becomes somewhat blasé, except it's 4 miles.
Oh, my.
Wow. From Goodman Stadium to downtown Bethlehem and the Lehigh River. And it requires going over a mountain. The Patriot League, it just means more.
That's a hardy band of engineers. Isn't that their nickname, the engineers?
Probably. I don't know. Smart people.
Probably.
Listen, man, I gave you all the Lehigh I got. The great Dan Johnson played there. Hmm. High school buddy of mine.
Yeah, who's that? What?
Legendary football player.
The great Dan Johnson. Dan High Johnson school buddy of mine. God.
We're talking great Lehigh players. We're talking Dan Johnson. Indiana went to Ohio State to play somebody, Paul. And look what happened. They were fixing for a beating, Paul. They looked good until they didn't. They got crushed. Looked like Indiana might be out of the playoff for about 2 hours until everybody else threw up on themselves. And now they might be back in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because where the SEC started the week arguing for 5 bids, they may only get 3, and the ACC may get 2. Somehow Clemson's not out of it. And I don't know what the hell's going on, Pat. But can you
William
tell me?
Christopher.
What a day.
Yeah. You know what's going on? The 12-team playoff is going on, and that's it. The 12-team playoff has collided with the year of wild parity. It's not quite 2007 because we've got an Oregon that's sitting there undefeated. But if you remember 2007, where everyone lost often, this is a bit similar, where teams can be good 1 week, bad the next. There is no predictability. There is just constant surprise and turmoil and uncertainty out there. It's great. It is fun. It's created 14 hours of, you know, edge of your seat stuff, like you said, that somewhere in this country, at some point in time, somebody's losing a playoff bid or salvaging a playoff bid or staying in the race or falling out of the race. And it's just fantastic. I mean, Ross and I were in the Horseshoe, noon game, cover that, write the column. I get in the car and I want to just drive as fast as I can to Cincinnati to watch Army Notre Dame. But in the meantime, that's when like Alabama is yakking up a bid and Ole Miss had already yacked up a bid. Watch till halftime there. That game's done. You know, it's
Alabama was
halftime.
At night. Yeah, Alabama was at night.
Then I, all right.
Yeah, you can't keep up.
No.
I get it. Yeah.
No.
I'm with you. I was like, I don't know what happened. Yeah. I had to work on that earlier. I worked on that. Took a while. Then
drive home. I get home at 10:15. Flip on A&M Auburn. I can't stop watching that till midnight. I mean, it was just unbelievable the amount of stuff that happened, and parity meets opportunity, and it's just been Amazing. The SEC itself, as you mentioned, the having cannibalized itself and basically cutting its number of potential playoff teams in half in one day, thanks to 5-5 Florida that wanted to fire its coach very badly early in the season. But now he's 6-5 against a murderous schedule, having to start three different quarterbacks this year. Not bad, Billy Napier. 5-5 Oklahoma, as you noted, hadn't beaten an FBS team since September and looked completely hopeless. Their offense horrible, their quarterback play terrible. Suddenly, they're rocking Alabama. 4-6 Auburn has been a disheveled mess for 5 years. They hired Hugh last year, Hugh Freeze, to save everything. It hadn't worked. This year had been terrible. All of a sudden, they rise up, beat A&M. So the stuff that's happening nationwide just made this one of the most memorable Saturdays I think we've ever had. And guess what? Next Saturday could be the same.
There were so many games, right, that would have been irrelevant to the postseason, you know, in a four-team playoff that were incredibly relevant and significant yesterday. I counted 14 games, my count, that would have been pretty much irrelevant to a four-team playoff that that were a big piece of the chaos yesterday to the expanded playoff and in the race to the expanded playoff. And, you know, a good example of them is like Florida and Ole Miss, right, which Pat just said. And we can stick there and stick to the SEC, which basically, is cannibalizing itself, right, in opening the door. I mean, you had three home underdogs, right, pull big upsets, Oklahoma over Alabama, Florida over Ole Miss, and then Auburn over Texas A&M. And, you know, two of those, Alabama and Ole Miss, were in the CFP committee's projected field last week. So they open up two spots. And one of those spots, as Dan and Pat mentioned, I think, is probably a second ACC team, whether that's Clemson or the ACC championship game runner-up, depending on how things fall this week. Or the winner of Clemson, South Carolina, you know. Could potentially get that spot. So the SEC, which I think we all thought had a chance at 5 and probably were almost certainly going to get 4, is now left with probably 3, right? Texas, Georgia, and Tennessee. And that's kind of contingent on some of the things, obviously, this coming week with Texas and Texas A&M's game. But it was wild in the SEC. I don't know if dear leader Greg Sankey's all that pleased with his home underdogs that kind of eating each other there in the league, which is good for the Indianas, right? Good for Tennessee's and certainly good for the ACC. That to me, those were the big winners, right? Of Saturday's chaos was Tennessee and Indiana bubble type of kind of bubble teams, and Notre Dame, which will probably, if they beat USC, get a home playoff game now, and then the ACC in a runner-up and maybe even a third-place team in the ACC finding their way into the playoff.
I would say, you know, I'm partial to the SEC's argument that, like, look, man, we got a lot of good teams. Like, there's a lot. There are more good teams in the SEC than in any other league. I think that's fair. I'm not an SEC apologist or anyway, but that's just legitimately it. And I kind of wonder if this era where everyone's got NIL and everyone's got the transfer and the top teams are a little weaker, as Kirby Smart says, and anybody can kind of step up, especially at home. Like, this may not just be a one-year thing. At the same time, like, you take Alabama. I mean, you can sit there and say, hey, I don't think Ole Miss has much of a case to get in the playoff right now, but we'll see. It's, again, the cake is still baking. A lot of crazy stuff happens, so we'll see, and need more time to kind of analyze it all. But I'm partial to, like, Ole Miss had to go play a Florida team that they're better than their record, right? Like, they've had injuries, they lost close games, kind of like Kansas. Like they lost five close games early in the season. Like they're better than what they were. But Alabama went to an Oklahoma team that wasn't any good. And not only that, they played horrible. And, you know, I don't like criticizing players, but that must have been an imposter Jalen Milroe. That could not have been Jalen Milroe. I think the Sooners found a guy that looked like Jalen Milroe, kidnapped him, swapped him in or something like that. That was a bad game by Alabama. There was nothing in that game that made you say, yeah, let's make a big argument for them. Just briefly on that, because it is Alabama. Like, I can only imagine the meltdown amongst Crimson Tide fans and the anger, confusion, dispute, whatever, at Kalen DeBoer and that team when you just get beat by Oklahoma. And it was the turnovers. It wasn't even like Oklahoma was doing anything. They just let Alabama beat themselves up there. Pat?
Yeah, that was terrible. And Milroe's worst game as a starter was against Tennessee last month until this one, which was even worse and really markedly worse. I mean, three interceptions, did nothing on the ground, inaccurate. So he's had a couple of games that they're two of their three losses. He has not played well at all. And boy, oh boy, that's, you know, this is the Nick would never ultimate scenario here. Like, Nick would never go lose by three touchdowns to a bad team in the SEC. That simply didn't happen. And it did here. And Oklahoma has a lot of pride, and they do have a good defense, but that's far from a good Oklahoma team. So to drop that game in that fashion was shocking and increases the heat on Kalen DeBoer. I mean, you don't do anything about it other than maybe he'll change some staff or do something. You know, you have to at least change the curtains or something there. You can't just kind of roll out of a three-loss season. And maybe more, I'll tell you what, they're reeling going in against Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Good luck there. So that was a very, very bad loss for Kalen.
And Auburn needs it to go to bowl, you know. So right. they're playing for something. They're obviously playing better. I don't want to see Kalen DeBoer's house if he loses the Iron Bowl and goes 8-4. What might happen to his yard or something?
Yeah, stay away.
Please don't do anything to anybody's home. But they're crazy down there, Dan, as you know. And they're not used to this. Yeah, I know. 10-2. Oh, and now they might be 8-4, 9-3, and missed a 12-team playoff. None of the years except his first year would Alabama have missed a 12-team playoff with Nick Saban as coach. It's the first time that Alabama didn't score a touchdown in a game since the infamous 9-6 overtime loss to LSU in 2011. So 13, right? Is it 13 years? Where are we at?
Yep.
Yeah, 13 years.
And that LSU like defense been that had long like ago, 50 NFL players on it.
Yeah, yeah. Both teams literally, right, had like 40 or 50 combined NFL players. That's a wild stat. And somebody, I don't remember who it was, posted this, and it got me to thinking that this will be Kalen DeBoer's most talented team ever, given the state of college athletics and the era that we're going into, that the rev share era, NIL in general, but the rev share era will even, at least for the top 30 or 40 programs, as we've discussed plenty on the pod, will even the playing field a little bit recruiting-wise. So you won't see the same school maybe have the number one ranking every year like Alabama has had, you know, what, 10 out of the last 12 years. So here he is, potentially the most talented team he'll ever have at Alabama's coach. And he's lost three games. And I can't figure him out. They are incredibly, incredibly inconsistent. And clearly going on the road is big time trouble. Like, they don't handle that well at all, right? Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Oklahoma, all losses, all on the road. And two of those three to teams that, you know, are not ranked. And it's just, it's kind of head-scratching how they can be so talented, but have so many silly mistakes, especially again on the road.
Kalen DeBoer, astounding track record to get that Alabama job. Like, incredibly qualified. Winning at small college level, winning at Fresno, winning at Washington, taking Washington national title game. The one thing he didn't really do as a head coach was deal with environments like that. You don't get that in the Pac-12. And it's hard. You'd have to hire another SEC or maybe Big Ten coach to have gone through that. But maybe, you know, that's about the only, which is hard to do. I mean, Saban did it because he was at LSU before he went to the NFL, but it's hard to do. So, that's a bad, bad loss. I kind of look at the Texas A&M game. That was just a wild game. I don't know if anybody really thought Texas A&M was that great. They kind of were slumping by with a good record. They had lost to Notre Dame. They, like, you know, they beat LSU, but what's that worth? And it's a lot of confusion. But I looked at that Auburn game as just, I mean, they drop up. They're in the penalty kick shootout of college. Can we get rid of that 2-point conversion thing?
Nobody like knows how to do overtime satisfactorily. Nobody does. No. NFL, college, there is no good overtime system that we have right now.
Keep playing another quarter. But then,
yeah, like, if they don't want to do that to athletes, you know, I get it. No.
So anyway. I think
maybe, you know, here's my idea, Dan. Here's my idea. Yeah. You're excited about my
idea. I am. I love ideas. Love chopping it
up. So how it is now, I think you keep the first overtimes regular, mm-hmm. right? And you don't have to go for two. Second overtime, you keep it. You have, you know, you keep it as regular, and then you have to go for two if you score a touchdown. When it gets to the third, the ball gets placed where the, you know, where the 2-point conversion is, but you get four downs from there. You know what I mean? You get four downs from the 3-yard line.
But then everybody would score every time, wouldn't they?
Not necessarily. Maybe we've seen 10. Plenty of goal line stands.
Move it closer, like,
yeah, or maybe go at the 5. Maybe go at the 10. Move it closer to give
school,
some separation.
When I played high school, it was the 10. And you got the ball at the 10.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's no good way.
Or, no. Dan,
or
bring back the tie.
Bring back my tie.
Loves a good tie.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
I love a good tie.
Can you imagine this dang playoff with ties?
Oh, yeah. My God.
And the tiebreakers of the ties.
Yes.
Dan. Yeah.
We already got people like me being like, you know, UMass ran the ball well against Georgia. I mean, what are we doing? They won by like 4 touchdowns, right? No, we don't. Someone, yeah.
All right. Max of 3 overtimes, if not.
This is going to be an extremely interesting campaign, political campaign by the SEC. Because they got to be inventive. One of my favorite inventions in this all playoff talk was when LSU got in the playoff with 2 losses. I think that was 2007, right?
Yes.
When everybody lost.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
They had 2 losses. Yeah. And they invented the idea. Les Miles ran it by his wife, and she said, you're undefeated in regulation, because they lost 2 overtime games. And they hyped that, undefeated in regulation, undefeated in regulation. Big deal. What? And they got in, and they won, they won the title. Yeah. So I'm dying to hear. They're down in Birmingham right now. They're everybody at the office, 5 a.m. Sunday morning, I bet. Let's go. We got to come up with a line, and eventually some white smoke will come out of the SEC offices, and there'll be a new line. And I'm dying to hear it, because a college football playoff with more teams from whatever. Here's the thing. But like, okay, you can get Alabama in, but what? Like, I don't even think an Alabama fan, you might be able to say, we should get in because we're in the top 12 in theory, but like, you're not going to win this thing. But that's not the point. This is what we always said about the playoff. It's not about who's going to win the title. My guess is it's going to be like Oregon, Ohio State 3, right? But it's something like that. It's all of this.
Yeah. No, it's getting in. That's, you know, that's always been the part of the excitement of the NCAA basketball tournament, is getting in. And that's why there's bubble talk for a month. And this, like, if this were basketball and you could play a bunch more games, if you could have a conference tournament, nobody in the SEC would want to play South Carolina or Florida. They're the hot teams, right? If you can't do it that way in this sport, but that there's just not that many good teams. By my count, I've got guys. I've got 3.75 good teams in college football.
All right.
I've got Oregon, Ohio State, and probably Notre Dame. Those are three. I've got Georgia on alternate weeks.
Might be 2.5.
And I've
Georgia
got
on alternate weeks.
I have SMU under suspicion of being good.
Ah, oh, okay.
We'll let it play out. Yeah. So briefly, last bit on the SEC because I don't know where it's going. So I think the team that's playing best right now, or not best, but that would purely on how they're playing. I guess you could make an argument for Florida, but South Carolina. Okay. So South Carolina, and South Carolina is playing Clemson at home on Saturday at noon. So they could get another quality win, which would be their sixth in a row. They are playing great. However, and they should have won two of these games. They should have beat LSU. They should have beat Alabama. Or even if they had won one, they'd be good. But how do you put them in over Alabama and Ole Miss when they lost to Alabama by two? They lost. And they got beat 27-3 at home by Ole Miss. And they have the LSU. So I'm partial to, like, who's playing best right now. Well, South Carolina might be the fourth best team in the SEC right now. But I don't know that they really have a path.
No. You can't disregard the head-to-head losses. Especially, they got blown out by Ole Miss, as you said.
Yeah. The Ole Miss loss hurts, right? Because they just got whipped at home. That one really hurts. The way I see the SEC's play, first of all, it could get worse for the SEC before it gets better, I think, right? Because, hey, they could continue to eat their own. There is if Vanderbilt can beat Alabama at home, Vanderbilt can beat Tennessee at home. And that game is this coming weekend. Yeah. So that would knock out another SEC team. And that's the pathway to where Alabama kind of gets back in the conversation. But it's also a pathway where if Clemson beats South Carolina, then the ACC all of a sudden is talking about not just two, but can they get like a third team in? You know, it could get pretty wild there. And then the Texas A&M game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If A&M wins that game and goes to the SEC championship game and loses the SEC championship game, they're a four-loss SEC championship game runner-up. What does the committee do with them, number one? Number two, what does the committee do with Texas, which will not have a single quality win?
Yep.
And two losses.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
Indiana,
wild.
I think, like, Texas could drop down to where Indiana is at, the like, on the bubble area.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. We have a potential actual bid thief, another element of the basketball conference championships that is fun, and that's A&M. If A&M beats Texas and wins the SEC championship, they go from no chance to in the bracket, and somebody gets knocked out.
At the two spot.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe. I guess conference champion.
Maybe three. No, there'd be three, maybe behind Miami or SMU.
Miami or SMU would be. Too,
like if you're Indiana or somebody else who may be construed as a bubble team, you want A&M out of the mix.
Yeah. Also, just briefly, and then we'll get to back to the ACC. But the ACC, they hate the SEC. They can do some damage this weekend to all those metrics.
Yeah.
Louisville is playing Kentucky. Florida State playing Florida, but they get them at home. Probably not. This Clemson South Carolina game is a beast. Oh, that game is at Clemson. It's not at home at South Carolina. I think I said South Carolina. And then finally, Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
Playing good football. They're 7-4 against Georgia. But even if they win 3 of 4 or they get something going, like you can knock down they're all about these metrics and all that. Well, the metrics start getting uglier. There is four chances. So, all right, we're going to go to break. We'll get back with more conferences. Settle in. This is going to be, we got a lot. All right, the Big 12 is we said the Big 12 is going to be an absolute free for all, and is it ever? We have the 8 different teams can make it, as I mentioned. We have a 4-way tie. The 3 teams at the bottom of the Big 12, Oklahoma State, Utah, and Arizona. They're tied with UCF. Those three, though, were ranked in the preseason, and they're currently in the last three spots in the league. Arizona State was picked last in the preseason poll. They control their destiny. All they got to do is beat Arizona in the border war. But I don't think that's what do they call that? Borderland.
The territorial cup.
Territorial cup.
Right?
Cup. That's
yeah,
it.
Arizona State. Arizona. Yeah.
My
yeah,
bad.
Yeah,
territorial yeah. cup. Iowa State's got to play Kansas State in Farmageddon. Colorado, it gets Oklahoma State, so that's good. And then BYU's playing Houston. So there's various things can go on.
And here. Dan, that mm-hmm. BYU-Houston game kicks off, I believe, at 10:30 Eastern. We might not know who's in the Big 12 championship to 2 a.m. Big 12, man. Big freaking 12.
Totally wild. Pat, thoughts? I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, I mean, this league has, I think we suspected pretty early on that this would be the league that was the most likely to just completely just go nuts. You know, after a couple of weeks, it was like, what the heck is actually going on out there on the plains and everywhere else that league has sprawled to? And here we are when the two teams that were leading the league both lost at the same time, BYU and Colorado, that certainly opened it up. And now here comes the absolute cast of thousands. And as you noted, like all these different games that could factor in, and I don't even know all the scenarios. Like, so Arizona State controlling its destiny is unbelievable. And Kenny Dillingham, good Lord. I mean, he might be the National Coach of the Year over Kurt Cignetti. Before I'd said that the balloting was closed, and maybe it's not. Maybe we should consider Kenny Dillingham. Although he lost it to such an extent, he nearly assaulted the officials at the end when they put a second back on the clock.
Let's go through that. What were your thoughts at the end of the game? Kenny said after, I don't care. I'm not getting into detail on it. We won. Here at Arizona State, we stormed the field twice. We got to storm it twice. He's like, because we stormed the field three times this season at Arizona State. Like he's so great. He's just all energy. He's like, whatever, we won in the end. But I've never quite seen that many people on a field before. There was the Cal Stanford when the Stanford was on the field.
The band, yeah.
Yeah, but this was
entire student body on the field.
The entire city was on the field. Ross, you are enjoying this thing.
Oh man, I have thoroughly enjoyed the Big 12 season, the Big 12 chaos. We predicted it before the season. It was going to be the most parody and chaotic and kind of fun and just wild league out there, and it really has delivered. But in that game is kind of a microcosm of the entire league and how it's been. It's just been wild and wacky and crazy. Kenny kind of went off pretty good there on the referee with his wife, like I think right there, TV reporters right there, all the fans draped over.
Like, you know, kids just wild. Yelling to the ref also, kids, like they were jumping in, like, I'm pre-lock, Eddie, yeah, I'll handle this.
it was wild. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I've long wondered about that strategy. I had a theory. Remember the Michigan State trouble with the kick,
right?
That what you do is just get a guy to run around and huck the ball in the air instead of trying the one thing that could beat you. Kenny tried it for four downs. Almost worked. It almost worked. If that last pass had not gone into the stands, but instead just landed on it would have landed on just the sideline. Right. It almost worked, but it didn't.
Hey, this is 2 weeks in a row somebody's tried that. I mean, like Louisville tried a Hail Mary that could have won the game, but I think the thought was the clock would run out, and it didn't, and they lost to Stanford. And this time, BYU hits a Hail Mary that damn near pulled the game out, but they completed it to the two.
I could not stop laughing at how many people are on the field. And then Scataboo is trying to get them all off.
Yeah.
they take down the goalposts so they don't get, then they got to put them back up. Like, I've never seen goalposts go back up in a game. I asked if anyone had ever lost after storming the field. There were, sorry for triggering Kentucky fans, but there were some Kentucky fans that said they had dumped
dumped
a bucket of Gatorade over, was it Stoops? Who was it?
No, it was Guy Morris.
They doused him in Gatorade, and then they lost on that crazy play.
There were
play.
Fans hanging on the goalpost when LSU was scoring the winning touchdown. I was there.
This sport.
Was tremendous.
All right.
Yeah.
Back to the Big Ten. We can't make sense of the Big 12. I don't know what to tell you. I'm excited that Farmageddon matters. Iowa State, man, as consistent as that Ames tap water. They're just like,
that's right.
Oh, you forgot about us, did you?
Still here.
Yeah, they were running trick plays. They were doing everything. Game you're at, what'd you think of Indiana? We've been waiting to see Indiana. Didn't look like they had an offensive line. They seemed rattled by the counts, the noise. Felt like the game got away from them on that punt. Punt got dropped, and then there was a special teams play. And they didn't seem like they could match with Ohio State. Regardless of the playoff thing, what were your thoughts on all that? Ross, what'd you think?
Well, I mean, it was an odd game because you came away from the game, you know, if you just saw the score and the stats, in a way you'd come away with this was a rout and a blowout, right? But there were two plays, a punt return for a touchdown in a missed snap on a punt. You can't remove plays from a game, but you know, they were significant. They were 14 points of that game. And all of a sudden, I think that game is much closer because Indiana's defense, I think, did enough. Ohio State, I think, had 315 yards of offense. I mean, they seemed to do enough to hang in there, like to hang in there within a touchdown or two. But those two plays really changed the game. And Indiana's offense, obviously, that's what you come away with mostly, is that Indiana's offense and all those light opponents earlier this year, when you look at what they did, the offense did the last 2 weeks against Michigan and Ohio State, and you scratch your head thinking, ooh, you know, is this team worthy? Because offensively, how much they struggled against decent to good teams. I think, you know, if everything, all the favorites won yesterday, and Alabama and Ole Miss winning, it's a really stressful time for the people in Indiana. But that didn't happen. And so I think that pretty clearly to me opens the door for them to be in the playoff. If they beat Purdue, of course.
Yeah. You know, Cignetti was pretty subdued after the game until got Jake Trotter from ESPN tried to pin him down on the playoff. And then he said, is that a serious question about whether they belong in the playoffs? Is that a serious question? I'm not even going to answer that. It's so obvious. But that was we got our Cignetti moment there right at the end. It was, Ross, you're right. I mean, I think that they were largely bailed out by the SEC as the day went along, because they were in a position where so much was riding on that game for them. It was, in a way, a one-game season. And they didn't pass the test. You are right that there were two plays. There were two punt team plays that broke the game open. Indiana started great. They were composed in a madhouse. They got a three and out on defense. They drove down a great drive and scored. They made a red zone stand. They're going into the second quarter. I'm thinking, shoot, they're hanging. They're doing everything they need to do. And then those are the kind of games when you are a bit outmanned, and let's face it, they are. Their offensive line, which is largely holdover guys from a 3-9 team, and a quarterback who is good but not a world beater, they got overwhelmed by Ohio State. When Ohio State dialed up the pressure and saw that Indiana couldn't handle it, then they just kept coming. And it was – the floodgates were open. And Cignetti admitted. I mean, he said over and over that Ohio State's a really good team, and he's right. Maybe the best team. I think there's two teams, certainly. I said there's 3.75. There's two that are ahead of everyone else. And we already saw them play each other once. But their Indiana's flaws were revealed, but you can also go back. And the good news is this isn't a game that the committee will go back and try to cherry pick, you know, oh, we'll look at the box score to figure out what happened. They all watched it. Everyone watched this game. Everyone was watching to see how Indiana would perform. So you got to see it, and then you can make your determination. Is that a playoff team or not? And I think it is right now because of the help they got elsewhere.
Yeah. 8 for 18, Curtis Rourke, 5 sacks, no touchdowns.
Didn't feel the pressure, didn't see it, didn't pre-snap read it.
Yeah, it was that was the problem. But you're right. It's interesting. It's the special teams plays, very similar to the Boise, Oregon game. Special team plays cost Boise that game. They played better, I thought, against Oregon than Indiana did against Ohio State. But that's also what differentiates teams. You have more depth. You've got freshmen that are 4 or 5-star players, really good players that are on your, you know, or you get Caleb Downs to come in and be your punt returner. That's pretty good. Thoughts on this? Ohio State punched it in with 38 seconds left from the one. They're leading 31-15. They score, make it 38-15. Doesn't matter to me. I've made my point on sportsmanship around here clear. I don't care about sportsmanship. Indiana's got, they're in the Big Ten. It's a fair game. So I'm not criticizing Ohio State on some moral ground. I'm not even criticizing them, but why did they want to, I mean, Kurt Cignetti did say Ohio State sucks.
Well, yeah. Hey, man.
Do we? Or are they trying to hurt their playoff chances? Like, why? I don't care that they did it. I am interested in why.
Well, I think after the game, Dan, you remember the comment that Kurt made over the offseason, Google me, right? Mm-hmm. You don't think I can win, Google me. And on the Jumbotron, there was a kind of a fake newspaper, Buckeyes Extra, you know, Buckeyes win, Google it, it said, the headline. So there was
said,
clearly.
Google it with a big L, the L in Google.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there was probably something to that, right?
Yeah.
You're going to talk? We're going to show you.
I'm fine with it. You say we suck? Yeah. All right.
And Kurt seemed to be fine with it. At least that's what he's told us, right? He was asked about it. And I think he said, like, you know, Ryan Day's got to do what he's got to do for his team.
Yeah, I asked the question. He said, I have no problem with it. I think actually he probably did in the moment have a problem with it because he was on the sideline. He was kind of like waving across the field, like, okay, I see what you're doing there. And the interesting thing was that basically, Travion Henderson tried to run out the clock. He broke the run up the middle and slid at the one.
Right.
So, like, the established protocol was there. You can take a knee, but Day's like, oh, no, forget that. We're going to score. And Day said afterwards, we wanted to finish this the right way and make sure everyone knows. And he kind of paused. It's the Ohio State Buckeyes. And I think probably the pause also indicated we want to make sure that mouthy dude from Bloomington knows it's the Ohio State Buckeyes. And we don't suck and we're actually better than you are. So I think there was certainly some message sending, maybe even animosity there. You know, Cignetti has come in and taken the league by storm, but he's probably also rankled a lot of people. And this was a chance for somebody to put him back in his corner.
Yeah, why'd you go for one touchdown? Because I couldn't go for 3 touchdowns. Right? It was the old kind of Woody Hayes. Could have riffed off that. Yeah, so Ohio State gets Michigan at home this week, but they're in good shape. I mentioned the fake punt call by Penn State. That Minnesota game, everyone was circling it. Minnesota's been playing well. They had Penn State down. There was a blocked extra point that was returned for a 2-point. Like a lot of all the little things that have to happen for these upsets, Minnesota was getting it done. And Penn State won that game. And, you know, they're sitting pretty for the playoff. Seemingly hosting a playoff game. Pat, what are your thoughts on how they won a game and what James Franklin played a role in that?
Well, that was an extremely brassy call. You said there was a block. There was a 2-point block extra point. There was also a blocked slash deflected punt that set up a Minnesota touchdown. But this would have been Penn State losing this game would have been like Alabama or Texas A&M or Mississippi losing. It would have been a terrible, possibly playoff-wrecking loss on the road. And they pulled it out. And they said they were clinging to that lead. And then they run the fake punt on fourth and one deep in their own territory. And, I mean, whew, it does appear that they've got another young tight end of note, a place they just keep churning them out. But the fella, the freshman that ran the fake punt, Luke Reynolds, took it, 32 yards on from the up back position. That was an incredibly gutsy call with basically your season on the line. So they did the thing you had to do on Saturday, was just win, just survive and advance. And they did enough to do that. And now, yeah, they're certainly in playoff position. They're hosting a Maryland team that's no good. They should coast through that, be 11-1, and wait and see where they end up.
I thought Tyler Warren, when he first ran it, I'm like, is that Warren? But it was, 85, I think. And it's like Tyler Warren, their tight end is phenomenal. And if Tyler Warren gets to go to New York for part of the Heisman, I think that would be great. He is an incredible football player. But I guess
a great moment for tight ends everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great tight. We've seen a lot of great tight ends, college football. Brock Bowers, obviously, last year. Sometimes Tyler Warren is a player. But I think if you had him in there, right, it shows it's going to be a fake because he's not on a punt team.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, when they first did it, I didn't see the number. I was like, oh, they just threw it. Like, great play. Get it to our best guy. Just go win the game, right? But it wasn't even that. That's what made it such an impressive deal. So I'm fascinated by this Penn State team, and I'm fascinated to see what they do in the playoff. They can go in any direction, but I thought this is a good win. I know it would have been a horrible loss, but when you get in these scramble games against one of these mid-level in your conference, not a bad team, not a good team, but not a bad team, and everything's going against you, and you pull it out and win, that's a great win for Penn State. I don't care if it's 26-25. At this stage of the game, just win. And then next week, they host Maryland, and they should be able to close this thing out and get in the playoff. But who knows, though? Who knows?
Yeah. Dan, Happy Valley, first-round playoff game. Exciting, 35 degrees, maybe a little snow, maybe an SEC team visiting.
35? Could be less than that.
25? Yeah. Yeah. Think about it. Most of the home games will probably be in the cold weather regions of the country, right? Ohio. State College, Columbus, potentially Bloomington, South Bend, maybe Eugene if they lose to Ohio State. I mean, all those, I think all but maybe one home game will probably be in the cold weather.
Bloomington's going to struggle to get in the top eight.
Yeah, they will. They will.
But Notre Dame, they got to beat USC, but they're going to host.
South Bend State College, Columbus, Eugene, those are all.
Yeah, the Columbus, Eugene probably, loser. One of those two.
Eugene's going to be a lot warmer than the other three.
Yeah.
If it comes to that.
Which is saying a lot because Eugene will be cold, probably.
It could also be 52 degrees. December, you never know. But it could also be 18 and snowing. And I mean, imagine if this one snowstorm just comes right through.
Yeah. The timing.
The playoff. Yeah. Like you could start okay, we're in South Bend and it's snowing at the noon game. And then, oh my.
I'm saying bring it, Dan. Bring it.
Oh, I'm fine with
it. I want, even me, Southern boy, who doesn't like the cold much, would love it.
I'm going to have to leave your flip flops at home, Ross.
Yeah.
This was another part of Death to the BCS that you can't play these games except in a bowl. And it was literally a quote by the Nebraska president saying, who would want to have a playoff game in Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska? I'm like, everyone? That was a whole chapter. Like, what are you talking about? I covered NFL playoff games in Green Bay, Foxborough, Kansas City. It starts snowing, even better.
Yeah.
Some of the most epic games.
But you don't think that Ohio State, Notre Dame, or Penn State wouldn't like to have Miami or Arizona State come in late December?
Let's go. Yeah. Fans will love it. It's great for the cities. It showcases these stadiums. Let's make sure at the Chick-fil-A guys, they're all friends. Let's go to University of Phoenix Stadium in the middle of a parking lot somewhere. somewhere in Maricopa County. Yeah, way better. Like, no, give me the horseshoe. Give me Happy Valley. And Happy Valley and South Bend look like two locks for a play for a home game. That would be astounding. All right, we will be back with small sample Heisman. Say something nice. They like handing out the Heisman at the end of the year. Travis Hunter didn't do anything to hurt his candidacy. I'll say that. They lost, but he did a pose. He had touchdowns, all that. But we like doing it each week. Who has got a small sample Heisman?
I do.
Go ahead, Pat.
Fernando Mendoza, quarterback, California. Cal won the big game against Stanford again. And I know the easy stereotype is that they just don't care out there. And there's some truth to it in terms of the numbers of people that don't care. But they do care. There are enough people that care about that rivalry and care deeply. And Cal was down 21-7 in this game. And came back. They 54-yard drive for a field goal. And then in the fourth quarter, 71-yard drive to make it 21-16. And then with everything on the line and trying to get bowl eligible. And this is a team in the Bears has lost 5 one-score games. Every loss has been close. Everyone has been agonizing. What do? They drive 98 yards to win the game. Fernando Mendoza, coming out of high school in Miami, had scholarship offers from Cal, Penn, and Yale. That's it, according to Rivals. No other D1 FBS school offered him. He goes to Cal. He's had a pretty good season, and then he has this great ending. And then he goes on TV afterwards, gets asked, and just breaks into tears. Unbelievable interview about how much the game meant to him and how much the team meant to him, how much this season and everything they've gone through together meant to him. And it was just such a great college moment that it does. Okay, Cal and Stanford don't matter in the playoff sphere, but the game matters to those fans, and it sure as hell matters to those players. And to watch the emotion that comes out when you win the game, that's college football.
Yeah, that was an awesome interview. Tremendous, and I'll remind us all, yeah, that games don't have to be relevant to the playoff or to the postseason to mean something to the people who play in it and the fans who attend. Jarquez Hunter, the Auburn running back, led the Tigers to the big rousing win over Texas A&M in the four overtimes. Ran for 130 yards, scored 3 touchdowns, runs just incredibly, incredibly hard. By the way, originally from Philadelphia, Mississippi. Shout out to Philly Miss. I used to spend a lot of money there at the Golden Nugget Casino in the Silver Star Casinos that are right across the street from one another, driving from Stark Vegas to there. So Jarquez Hunter, product of Philly Miss. Hunter, by the way, now with over 550 yards in the last 4 games. So he is a stud in a building block, certainly, for although he's a senior. Auburn to build on certainly that win, but Hunter gets my small sample this week, Dan.
I'm going to go with Taj Brooks, the running back for Texas Tech, who had 37 touches of the ball yesterday in their victory over Oklahoma State that could have gone bad, but instead got the Tech to a 7th victory and kept them in this playoff chase somehow. 198 total yards, 4 touchdowns. Big time game for Taj. Taj has been, this is his 5th year at Texas Tech. Era of the portal, era of movement, he's stuck. He's from Manor, Texas. Loves playing at Texas Tech. He's gone through coaching changes, losing seasons, this or that. Believes in Joey McGuire. Has put together 2 great years. Rated for 1,500 yards last year. Absolutely could have bounced to somewhere bigger. Didn't. He's back. Got 1,300 something this year. 14 touchdowns. That's just rushing the ball. He's got a couple more receiving. At least one more receiving. And this Texas Tech team has, based on the logjam, will probably not win the Big 12, but has made great strides in the last couple of years. And that was a hell of a performance to save what could have been an ugly loss. So Taj Brooks, small sample Heisman. All right. Can we say something nice? I don't know. Pat?
Sure. Absolutely. After a week like that, you have to say something legitimately nice, and I will. I want to talk about those Blue Turf boys from Boise. We touched on them briefly, but this was a moment. It looked like they were going to do what Alabama did and what A&M did and what Ole Miss did and BYU did and Colorado did, which was kind of blow their spot at the playoff. They're down at Wyoming. Brutal place to play. Doesn't matter whether the team's any good. You go there, 7,000 feet, hard place to play. They're losing. Ashton Jeanty is hurt. Comes back in the game. Helps them drive down in the fourth quarter. 75 yards, down 13-10. Score the winning touchdown with how much time was left? It was just a couple of minutes left, I believe. And maybe 5 minutes left. And secure their spot in the Mountain West Championship game and to keep alive their playoff hopes. Boise has been a great story for 20 years, 25 really. And this is kind of the next iteration of it this season. Okay, they kept Jeanty. They made a good hire with Spencer Danielson. And they're going to have a shot at making the playoff. They win two more games. Got to beat Nevada. And then you got to win the Mountain West Championship game. It's in position for Boise. Return of the bus. Best season since 2010. Good job, Broncos.
Not only make the playoff, right? Could get a bye. Right now, last week, they were CFP's number four seed, and I don't know that that's going to change this week. Now, it may change. The Big 12 champion may leap them at some point, especially if it's like a hot Arizona State or something, but we'll see. Yeah, incredible stuff there going on in Idaho. Dan, Air Force won a game yesterday without completing a pass. Their quarterback was 0-for-3, 0 touchdowns, 0 passing yards, 1 interception. So he did complete a pass to the wrong team. And they won. They won the game against Nevada 22-19. They've had a couple of 100-yard rushers. They averaged, you know, like over 5-6 yards a carry running the ball. But it is quite the stat line. And kudos to Air Force for doing something that's never been done, at least this season in FBS, a team winning a game without having a single yard of passing.
Kudos there, too, to Troy Calhoun. That team was in disarray. They were very young. They were 1-7 after losing to Army, and now they've won their last 3. So nice showing of some pride there in the program.
I might have a few some nights because one thing we never got to was Notre Dame. It was so anticlimactic. Yeah. Notre Dame just wiped out Army. And, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with Army wasn't going to really be able to compete at Notre Dame's level. But give Notre Dame credit. Since they lost that game to Northern Illinois, they have been a steamroller. There was one close game against Louisville, 31-24. Everything else has been double digits, 20 points, 30 points, 49 points, one of them. They beat Florida State. They don't have a ton of great wins, but man, they look good. And I am fascinated to see what Notre Dame does in this playoff because they could win a couple games. They could, I don't know, but they look great. And so congrats to Marcus Freeman. Everyone was all over him after that. Another bad early season loss, but he has righted this ship, and this team is absolutely absolutely rolling. I don't know if anyone has quick thoughts on them or not. We should have mentioned them earlier, but
yeah, given the wattage around the game, yeah, they turned it into a non-game very quickly, which good teams do. And that's they're impressive. They really are. They are a dominant team at the line of scrimmage, and they've got some playmakers as well. They're just well put together, And they look out for them in the playoff. Absolutely. Like I said, 3.75 good teams, and I'll put them on the list.
Yeah,
among
I
my
like
3.75.
They got to go to USC, so we'll see. Yeah. One other is, or two others, Nebraska got bowl eligible.
Yeah.
First time since 2016. Yeah. There's no more loyal fans. I don't know what bowl they're going to. I don't know if they can get in there on the Pop-Tart Derby. I don't know if there's mayo involved. It ain't going to be much, but congrats to Nebraska fans who finally got a bowl. They were 0-9 in every time they got five wins, they couldn't get the six. They lost their last nine times when trying to get the sixth win to get into a bowl game. So good for them. But I also want to see something nice that we, the team that gets just no attention is SMU.
Yeah.
33-7. They just blitz over Virginia. They're undefeated in the ACC. I'm sorry. They're 10-1. Their only loss is to BYU early. Kevin Jennings threw for 323, had three touchdowns, either throwing or running. They are locked up in ACC thing. Like, this team had to buy their way to relevance. It literally aren't getting, like, they had to beg and buy their way in, their new money, and they just are rolling right along. And it's like they get no attention.
Just also among my 3.75 good teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're undefeated with Jennings as their starting quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. You had the mid-season quarterback, starting quarterback change, which you often don't see a team do in, you know, make the playoffs or something and win a conference championship, and they're on the way to potentially doing that. By the way, if Miami, you know, beats Syracuse, obviously, this coming week, it's SMU Miami in the ACC championship game. So it's the death penalty ponies in the
the Nevin Shapiro Hurricane.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Hurricanes are so colorful. They had two 30 for 30s, the U and the U2. So great. Billy Corbin, get another one going. Yeah. Well, it's all legal now. It's all legal now. And we will be back on Tuesday. We're going to do another little longer one. We're going to have one edition this week. So you can listen to us on your drive to wherever the heck you're going. Big travel. Awesome weekend coming up with all the rivalries, with this. The great thing about this playoff chase is, as wild as Saturday was, you just want to see what the next chapter brings, because it's going to be just as wild this Saturday. And then there's another. It just goes. So this was awesome. This was awesome. So thank you for sharing it with us here. We continue subscribing, sharing us on social media. Tell your friends about us. We need listeners. We will talk to you later.